So, Rage, what are we talking about this time?
Way too much, so let's just get into it.
Sci-Fi Melody, Symptom 178, Bits and Pieces.
Well, welcome back, Sickies, to our final episode of the year. I think most of us are going to say thank God, not because of the episode, but because of the year, mostly. So, hope you had a good Christmas, and looking forward to a good new year, and that you had chance to at least engage with family and friends and other loved ones, be it face-to-face, Zoom, whatever, phone call, whatever, and that it was a good time for all. So today we are going to do a tradition that we actually didn't do last year, but typically we do a kind of an end-of-the-year review and wrap-up. And what that's going to be looking like is, first, we're going to start off with, we're going to close out Dune December by talking about what we think of the new Dune coming out, any kind of expectations, initial thoughts from the trailer. And once that will be fairly short because we only have the trailer, and we've decided not to do deep dives and articles about cast and production, that we don't want to do that. And because this is normally where we would have done the new Dune film, but of course it got pushed back. And then we're going to go back and we have a list of bits and pieces, the highs and lows of the year for us, for the episode, not the year 2020. If it was up to the year 2020, we would pretty much just say low, and that would be the end of the episode. So first, let's jump into Dune by Denis Villeneuve, the first, the new one upcoming in 2021, which was slated to come out this month. But of course, thanks to the beer virus, it was pushed back. Hopefully it'll be in cinemas. Hopefully by the time enough vaccines are around, cinemas are opening back up. Because I personally do not feel like getting HBO Max to see this, because that's where I'll be streaming. And I'm not buying another streaming platform. I'm just not. So, but nonetheless, the next Dune will be coming out, and my initial thoughts will be on display once after I shut up and give Thomas and Scott a chance to talk. So we've all seen the trailer. What are your guys' thoughts?
I'm cautiously optimistic. Visually, it looks amazing. I'm pretty sure that fight that we saw is Gurney Halleck and Paul. And the shield scene is awesome. And the speed at which that fight is going is more realistic than what you've seen in prior Dune adaptations. I was also impressed by the look and the feel of Arrakis, the sandworms, and you get the overall immersion of the Dune universe is what I expected. And I think the casting looks spot on for these characters. It's hard to tell how true to the novelization it's going to be, I shouldn't say novelization. It's a film adaptation of a novel, but it's, you know, we haven't seen enough in that trailer to tell that, but it seems like they're staying to a pretty straightforward telling of the first Dune movie. And I'm cautiously optimistic about what we're going to get out of this. And I think you got the right director running this one too.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I'm optimistic and I like where it's going and it looks amazing, but I'm very hesitant because I've been burned way too many times.
Okay. That makes sense.
Oh, wow. I just read that this movie is actually only going to cover the first half of the first book.
I was going to mention that, Scott, but we'll get to that. We're still covering initial thoughts.
Yeah. I'm just hesitant because I've had times where I've seen trailers and I thought, ooh, that's going to be a great movie. And then it sucks. So it's not even close to what the trailer shows. So
yeah. I think the biggest example of that was Battlefield Earth.
Worst movie ever.
Really? We saw some pretty bad movies.
We have. But I get that, Thomas, because it looks fantastic. It looks like, the Dune we've been looking for. But you never know. You just never know. So anything else?
It's hard to get a lot of reads out of what you're seeing in that trailer, but what, you know, as someone who's seen over the years, sandboxes get passed off to other people and other creators, I'm at least cautiously optimistic when the world building looks like what you expect and the characters are acting semi the way they're supposed to in the bits and pieces that you do get in the trailer. Let's see how many times I can drop this, the episode name today, but I'm cautiously optimistic.
Is that the new thing? Yeah, I would, you know, my initial reaction was, this is kind of the Dune we wanted. You know, Scott has said, and I concur, that if you're going to do Dune right, you have to have big budget, because we've seen, but it can't just be big budget. It also has to be acting and directing, because David Lynch's Dune had the budget, but it lacked in everything else. Sci-Fi Channel's Dune was fantastic on the acting side and the storytelling side. They nailed it. But the costumes were bad, the effects were bad, given the limited budget. So this is kind of that, the technology is caught up, the budget is there, the actors are there, the prime, and we have a director that has shown that he appreciates original material and is going to do treat it as well as he can. So all the elements seem to be in place. Now, again, I do have to agree with Thomas that I think I'm not as cautious as he is, but I understand the caution. Now we can discuss, Scott, you can look at the, since you've read Dune more than we have, take a look at the cast list, if you would, and let us know what you think. So, for example, do you picture Jason Momoa as Duncan Idaho?
No, but now that he's cast for it, I can actually see him pulling that role off fairly well. I don't see Duncan Idaho as the muscle-bound Jason Momoa, but depending on how you film it and I think it'll work. He wouldn't have been my first choice, but he's an excellent actor who can definitely bring the skill and athleticism that you need for Duncan Idaho. And I'll believe him more than either of the guys that portrayed him in the other two television adaptations and film adaptations.
Okay. What about Josh Brolin as Gurney Halleck? So Thanos as Gurney Halleck?
No.
No? Why not?
Gurney Halleck is a troubadour, poet, warrior. And I don't see Thanos as the troubadour poet, and he's an ugly lump of a man. So you need some hideously ugly actor who is constantly quoting random bits of poetry and spiritual verses and singing and playing a balisset, which is essentially a guitar, at all times, but who's also deadly skilled with a knife. I don't see that as Thanos. I just, it's a hard one.
What about the guy playing Paul?
Seems like a good cast. That
teenager
that
fits. Looking.
Yep, that fits.
Chani, that's actually being played by, what's her name? Zendaya, who played MJ in Spider-Man.
The look is right for the role.
Okay.
I'll have to see how it's acted. But it seems, I don't have an issue with that one. That seems like a good cast.
And let's see here. Drax the Destroyer as Fade.
Dave Bautista, is he Fade or is he Raban? Because if he's Raban, makes
Raban,
sense.
Raban, yes. Excuse me, Raban.
Yes, Dave Bautista, the wrestler / Drax as Beast Raban is absolutely perfect. That's that is probably the best cast you could do for that role.
Well, as long as he carries on like Savage, that'll work.
And he should. He should be able to.
Now, I'm sure Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica. Well, honestly, no one's going to match up to Lady Jessica, your standard, because you're picturing ancient Greek Helen of Troy. So let's just move on there.
From what I saw, though, it's the best cast of a Lady Jessica yet. It's okay. An impossible cast, much like Gurney is an impossible cast. And if I backtrack to Gurney, it's probably a good cast because, it's as close as you can get, but an impossible cast. Lady Jessica, it's the best effort at casting that role I have seen.
Okay. What about Poe Dameron as Leto?
I'm not a fan of Poe Dameron, the actor or the character. So I'm skeptical.
Okay.
But Leto isn't as important as a character as people think.
I like Oscar Isaac as an actor. I've seen him in some really good stuff, so I don't blame him for Poe Dameron. Let's see, who was playing Fade? I can't seem to find who's doing Fade for some reason. Fade has a bigger role than Raban, and you'd think I'd see his actor, but...
It might be that they're only doing the first half, though, and Fade's role in the first half of the story is very minimal.
That could be, because this is a two-part film, which we'll get to in a minute. I guess I'll do two more. Stellan Skarsgård, who is the is going to be playing Vladimir Harkonnen. Let's just be honest. No one's going to top the guy from the sci-fi films. The sci-fi series is Vladimir Harkonnen. I think that's not to say that Skarsgård can't do a good job. It just means that he's up against he has big shoes to fill.
And he's got to put on about 100 pounds.
Right. Well, there's that, but it's just also the way the style of acting.
I'd have cast him as Duke Leto.
That, it's funny. I was just thinking that, wouldn't he make a better Leto than a Vladimir Harkonnen?
Denis also wants to change that character. He doesn't want to make him a caricature, and he wants to make him a more nuanced antagonist, which is probably the correct thing to do.
But he's a bad guy in the book.
I guess what he's saying is he's definitely still going to be the antagonist and the villain, but he wants to make him a nuanced antagonist with depth, not a morally gray character. Definitely the bad guy. But he wants to show him as a more dangerous antagonist rather than just being the over-the-top caricature of evil and vice that he is in the novel.
And see, that one I don't get because I'm so sick of everyone. Let's do nuance. Let's do nuance. Nuance, nuance, nuance. And Scott, before you said, that's the style at the time. Yeah, so was putting an onion on your belt at the time Grandpa Simpson was a young guy. Doesn't make it right.
I
don't want to. Years from now, we're going to be saying as old men, well, we had Darth Vader and we made him nuanced, which was a style at the time. Oh, and then there was that dictator and Pol Pot. We made him a little more nuanced in the killing fields, which was the style at the time. That serial killer we made nuanced, which was the style at the time.
I think you're misinterpreting nuanced in this point. I'm not a huge fan of every single film showing you a villain who's truly an anti-hero and is only the bad guy from a certain point of view. I think what he's trying to say is that you're coming up with a villain whose plans are nuanced, which makes a more entertaining and believable villain.
Well, okay, that I can do.
Instead of a one-dimensional Bond villain. Or, Baron Harkonnen in the novel and Baron Harkonnen in the other films is simply evil to be evil. And
he wants power. Why do you need to go more into it? Because that means he's going to introduce his wife. That's why he's so evil.
That's not where Denis is going with this, I don't think. I think where Denis is going with this is showing a guy who's making plans, who's thinking things out and actions and actually giving you a believable villain. And instead of telling you how dangerous this guy is and how smart he is and cunning he is, showing that to you. We're not talking about his motivations, I don't think.
Yeah,
we're not looking for nuance. You're jumping to nuance and motivations. And I think where he's going is more of showing you a bad guy who, you know, when you have the hero, you don't tell us that the hero is intelligent and a good fighter. You show us these things. You show us the hero's wisdom. So here we want to show you the cunning of the villain.
I agree with you, but I got the cunning of the villain when I watched the sci-fi version.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is, what he's saying is not that he wants to show you nuance in his motivations, but he doesn't want him to simply be a caricature. They want him to be a more developed villain.
Well, okay, well, here we go, because I assumed you would just say, yeah, that guy was Vladimir Harkonnen. He has big shoes to fill. Instead, Scott went with his usual devil's advocate, so we'll move on.
He has big shoes to fill. I'm just saying I'm interested in what he wants to do with that character. And look, he's changed Lady Jessica, too. He's making Lady Jessica more of a soldier and a warrior. And he says he wants to make her warrior priestess as opposed to space nun that she was in the book. I'm wondering about that, because that's a big departure. Lady Jessica was not a warrior priestess in the book. It doesn't bother me so much, but she was not one of Paul's frontline fighters. And I think you're going to see a Lady Jessica who's going to be a frontline fighter in this too. But if that's his deviation, the other thing, I can see where the other controversy is going to be. I'm waiting for the far right to jump up in arms on this one. Liet Kynes is a female.
Oh yeah, that's right. They changed the
Dr. Kynes is a woman. It doesn't bother me. I'm fine with it.
They just didn't do a she for he, but they also did a race swap as well.
Yeah.
So,
it doesn't bother me. It changes nothing of the story that Liet Kynes is a woman in this and not a man.
I can say that some of the channels I have watched that review pop culture, which are at the very least right of center, have not seemed that up in alls about it. And my supposition about that is because Denis chose a character that wasn't so central to the story. That it's not like they race and gender swapped Paul.
Yeah, or gender swapped the Duke and Jessica.
Yeah, they took Liet Kynes, who honestly takes a departure, exit stage left fairly quickly.
Yeah, he's not as important as you think he's going to be.
The argument from those individuals, be they right or wrong, was that a box had to be checked, and they checked the box, but they did it in a way that would placate both sides.
Yeah. I think you could gender swap just about any character in this story except for two. You can't gender swap the Lady Jessica. I mean, you could make her the Duke, but then Leto would have to be the Bene Gesserit. So whoever is in the consort role has to become the Bene Gesserit, because they can only be women. And you can't gender swap Paul in this case, because he has to be the Kwisatz Haderach, which is the male Bene Gesserit. And if he's not a male Bene Gesserit, the whole story falls apart. This is one case where you can't gender swap the lead without it deteriorating the entire story. I'm sure someone would say you could, but the story would lose. You'd have to get rid of the whole Kwisatz Haderach arc. And if you get rid of the Kwisatz Haderach arc, that holds so much of this story together.
That's not happening, so we need not worry about it. But I would say it looks good. I think another interesting aspect is that it's going to be in two parts to try to give the detail it needs, since this is a grand sweeping arc. And we need to have that. We need to have that information without having exposition dump.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably a good call that they split it. The only question I have, though, is given the tremendous budget of this film, what will happen with part two? Because this is leading into the next question. And this is a two-parter you guys can answer. One, is it a good thing they split it into two parts? And two, will this movie be a flop? And my take is it's going to be a loss leader. Now, some have speculated that who's producing this film? I think it was Legendary Pictures. But there's someone else, I forget.
And it's distributed by Warner Brothers.
Yeah, Warner Brothers and by extension of that, does AT&T own Warner Brothers? I think they do. But they have decided that this is going to, part one at the very least, will be a loss leader simply because of the fact that it probably won't appear in film, cinema, and even if it does, not a lot of people are going to go. But with that in mind, does that mean they'll just be like, well, slash the budget? And that part two would be showing, for example, the battle where Paul raids the Imperial base. And if you cut the budget on that, you might have this, it would be like having this wonderful budget from Fellowship of the Ring and then deciding to slash it into half for Return of the King, and the Battle of Pelennor Fields looks like garbage, but a small skirmish in Fellowship looks amazing. That's something I'm wondering about.
Thomas?
I understand that, and this is where I'm hesitant too, because I definitely think this has to be a two-parter, because this is a massive story. I mean, to tell it right, it basically took an entire miniseries to even get close.
Right.
But that's the other issue. I don't know, movie studios have screwed this up so many times. So many times. And I'm hopeful, A, that it does well, it does it right, and that they continue it. Because if they don't, this is going to be another bad Dune.
Yeah.
And we don't need that, because this is an amazing franchise.
So here's the thing. One, the overall success in the theater, I believe, is going to be tied to the prequel TV show that began filming in November of 2020 in Hungary and Budapest, I believe. Which, if that is somehow successful, that will drive people to see the movie. Second, if it is a loss leader, or if it doesn't make enough money, and on a $165 million budget, it's going to have to make $400, $500 million to be considered a financial success. If it isn't, they have not greenlit the second film. Denis simply said, we're cutting it at a halfway point of that book, and I am not cramming this all into one film. So he took the artistic stance of, I'm only telling half a story. And if it makes enough money and they greenlight the second film, then we'll tell the other half of this. So if this movie is a bomb, we simply won't get the other half of it.
And
it's
that would
not
be
contracted. We just won't get the other half.
That's my concern.
And if I had to guess where they're going to cut this movie, it's going to be after the Battle of Arrakeen, with the death of Leto, and with Paul and Jessica fleeing into the desert and coming across the Fremen, where Stilgar says most people don't want to find the Fremen here. You cut it about there. Maybe you cut it before Paul starts leading his guerrilla band into the desert, but it's got to be cut right around there shortly after the Battle of Arrakeen. Which, if that's where they cut it, you've got a lot of time to tell the first half of that story the way you need to. You just don't have an exciting movie.
Yeah. That first part of the whole book is of a slow crawl. So
now I will say a few final I think you talked about a show. Is that supposed to be the Sisterhood of Dune, I think it's called?
Yeah, the Sisterhood of Dune.
That's a Prime series.
Is it going to be on Amazon Prime? I just saw Sisterhood. I didn't see where it was going to stream.
All right, I think it's a Prime series, I think, because right now I know that Trillionaire, well, what's the guy
HBO
in charge?
HBO Max.
Oh, it's HBO Max. Of course it would be. So here's the problem with that a lot of people right now are not getting HBO Max, because really at the end of the day, there's no unique content on there.
You're getting HBO's content.
What's that?
You're getting HBO's content.
Sure, sure. But Game of Thrones crashed and burned at the end. So who's jumping on board with that? Their big leader, which was Game of Thrones, is gone. And right now, the numbers are such that HBO Max is not doing well. They're looking for their in. And they have the Snyder Cut. But I don't think that's going to save them because, yeah, sure, a bunch of Snyder fans of the Justice League are going to be jazzed. But then you'll get guys like me who are going, I don't like Zack Snyder's DC. I'm not watching it. And then you have you guys who are just flat out burnt out from superheroes to begin with. So why would you get HBO Max to see a superhero movie that you don't want to see anyway?
I don't think you don't get HBO for one-off things like that. I will say that I've always felt HBO has had a good series running, whether it was from The Sopranos or whether it was from Game of Thrones or whether it's Westworld or
right.
They also do. HBO honestly probably produces the best documentaries I've ever watched.
Okay, Scott, but you're also missing one vital link. HBO Max doesn't exist outside the United States, meaning all of that content goes to Netflix.
Yeah.
So that means if they're not doing awesome numbers in the U.S., then whatever money they'd be getting internationally is going to Netflix. And yeah. Not only that, for those that actually care to do it, people are buying VPNs and just going, screw it. I'll just get a VPN and watch everything on Netflix. Because I know if I set, like when I go to Germany to visit the in-laws, and I've turned on Netflix on my phone, there's a whole host of stuff on there that is not available here because it's separated by 50 other streaming services.
Look, the streaming service game is going to get really annoying here in a second because I'm already up to five. I have CBS All Access. I have Amazon Prime. I have Hulu. I have Disney Plus, and I have Netflix.
And CBS All Access is about to become Paramount Plus.
And CBS is?
I have heard that because it's not doing well. They're big leader. Because the thing with all these streaming services, they need to find a leader. And CBS's was supposed to be Discovery, but Discovery did not lead.
No.
Star Trek is not the leader that it was supposed to be. So therefore, CBS All Access is, rumor has it, going to eventually get enveloped into Paramount Plus.
I think what will happen is all of these streaming services will eventually get enveloped and it'll probably be into Disney Plus, and Disney will just pay them for their catalogs, and you'll eventually get down to having Hulu, Netflix, Prime, and Disney. And that's better for the consumer than all of it. I think I have HBO Max through my HBO subscription, but I don't think that would be a bad one to have. But yeah, the streaming game is going to get pretty hairy, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with HBO Max, because HBO has always been a niche thing. It produces great TV, but a lot of people don't see it because HBO is expensive.
Right. So getting out of this rabbit trail, I'm just saying that a lot of people don't have HBO Max, so they're not going to see this Sisterhood of Dune or whatever it is. So that's not going to lead into a lot of people going to see it in the cinema. So is this going to be a flop? And Scott, you said, unless you decided to turn devil's advocate, which is, you know, very possible right now, that these Dune is a hard franchise to turn into a mega bucks blockbuster because, and before you go saying, oh, but Game of Thrones, House Politics and Game of Thrones, you're also forgetting that Game of Thrones was written by two guys that wanted to make fantasy for football jocks, which turned it into hot fantasy that pumps. And that's what hooked them in. It wasn't, had it just been the intrigue, it would not have hooked in people. But the violence and the sex is what brought it in. And Dune, Denis is not going to turn it into an overly violent orgy fest to get people in. He's not doing that.
Well,
therefore,
I think there is a place for this. That's the thing. You're right, because yes, it's not going to be like Game of Thrones. It's not. But there is a place for the most psychological and more in-depth and the something there similar is. To this.
There is. But it's not mass consumptionable, kind of like Avengers.
Well, it might be. And hear me out. After the year we've had, there's going to be a lot more desire for difference.
It could be, could be.
We might have, this might be the escapism that we're looking for. I'm not saying it is. I'm not sure it is. But it could be. Because movies are supposed to be escapism. And this is definitely going to be escapism because this is a totally different universe. This is not even close to anything else out there.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So it might be what people are looking for.
All right. And it's possible. It's possible. I just personally am wondering, and here's where Scott plays devil's advocate, that it will not draw the crowds that it'll need. Hopefully it'll draw enough to get the sequel. That's what I'm really hoping for. So
I think this is going to be a niche film, and I think the budget is too big for it to make its money back. I think the movie will be good. I think it'll probably be the best film adaptation of Dune. But I think financially, this isn't going to be a success.
Okay. Now, the final note I want to make about this is Jodorowsky made a point that, oh, this looks like it's predictable and it's not going to do well, to which I thought, okay, Jodorowsky, it's predictable. By predictable, you means follow the story instead of turning everything into an acid bath? Okay, well, that is not my, I don't see that as a problem, because consider what you want to do, Jodorowsky.
It is.
Defecating gold Paul Atreides does not appeal to me.
No, it is going to be predictable, and it is going to follow the story. And all any fan of Dune, who are the people who are going to watch this movie, by the way, want is a visual adaptation of this story that we can see rather than read. We want a good visual adaptation. We're not looking for a new interpretation of Dune that's radically different. We're not. And it kind of bugs me, you know, creators that play in a sandbox that want to change the story and say, well, this is my Dune, annoy me. To an extent.
I agree. I couldn't agree more.
I was just reading about Picard season 2, and the showrunner said, we're not changing anything based on the feedback of Star Trek fans who weren't happy with Picard. Well, that's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard.
Well, and it's enough to make you not tune in.
It's just stupid. You need to listen. You are not, if you want to write your own thing, write your own thing. But if you want to step in a sandbox and play in a universe, that is not the time to reinterpret a story to your own way. And if you do it, you're taking a gamble that the fans will follow you. And if the fans are telling you we don't like it, then set your damn ego aside and say, this is not the place for my artistic creativity. I need to write what the fans want out of this franchise. If you don't want to be constrained and you want to have artistic integrity and creativity, then don't jump into a franchise that constrains that with decades of canon behind it and 20 books. So Jodorowsky, if you want to tell your own original stuff, don't jump into a franchise that has 20 novels about it already to tell you the story that you need to tell and how the characters will and won't act and what their motivations are. Kurtzman team, if you want to tell your own version of what humanity becomes in the future, do it. Don't jump into a franchise that has 50 years, 800 televised episodes, and 10 movies telling you what this franchise is about to reinterpret it. Kathleen Kennedy, if you want to tell your stories with your social and political agenda, tell something new. Don't jump into a franchise that has been apolitical and put your own stamp on it. The fans expect something. It is the equivalency of going to a restaurant and ordering a steak and getting tofu and egg rolls and wondering why the customer's angry.
Hallelujah. I've been trying to plug that for a while. You know, when you look at the idiocy of it that I don't get is, so you have your paying fan. This is a risk-averse industry, and you have your paying fans that you've decided to disregard.
This would be like...
In search of an unproven, untested market. Now, maybe I'm an idiot, but I thought in business, it's always easier to keep the customers you have than ditch, than get new ones. And so that doesn't mean don't get new ones, but it always means while you're trying to get new ones, make sure you keep the ones you have.
Yes. And you don't tell the fans, we don't care about your concerns, because that's stupid. You're not winning new fans to Star Trek with Discovery and Picard. You're not. What you're doing is losing the ones that you have. And same thing with Lower Decks. But the equivalency of what Kathleen Kennedy, Joe Dworsky, and the Kurtzman team for Star Trek is doing would be if you had a YouTuber or a podcaster who had a Patreon account and then took all the suggestions that their paying Patreon members sent them and said, yeah, I know you wanted us to talk about Evil Dead Army of Darkness in next year's horror month, but we're not going to do that, and we're going to review Leprechaun. Even though none of you wanted Leprechaun, this is what we're going to do. Oh, and I know you guys said that you want the Rage Master to sing more, but we've decided with the artistic creativity that he's not going to sing again, and everyone is going to do the next month as Lord Rage Master.
Because we have an artistic expression to make.
Even the podcasters, right, if the amateurs know when you set up a Patreon account that you do what your Patreon fans tell you to do, how do the professionals look at it with their arrogance and say, our paying customers buying this streaming service, telling us what they didn't like about this show, we're not listening to you and we're not considering your feedback?
Because you said it right there. Arrogance.
I was just about to say that. So, well, I think that's a good leave off for Dune, that why we have hope that Denis is trying to stick with the original, and that gives us hope for the new one. Some of us more cautious than others, but
I would expect this to look a lot like Blade Runner 2049 in the fact that that didn't make a profit either. It was $260 million on an $185 million budget.
I agree. And I'll just say that the still suit looks great. And I don't care that Jodorowsky calls it and said my version would have been better, because no, Jodorowsky, it wouldn't have. But let's move on then. We've covered Dune December. Now I want to finish out with the bits and pieces. And what I've done, Sickies, is I sent Thomas and Scott a list of things to consider, which are some of the highs and lows of Sci-Fi Malady this year. Not the year 2020. Otherwise, we'd just say it sucked. Good night. But some of the things that we liked and didn't like. So we're going to go through here on about 8 topics as best we can. As best we can. Each of us will give our opinion about each topic. So I have the list here. And the first thing we want to go over is favorite month topic. And that's difficult, I know, but based on your opinion, and all of us may have different takes, and that's fine, we'll start, I guess, with Thomas. What was your favorite month topic of the year 2020?
I think it's conspiracy theory.
Okay. Why?
Just because of how crazy it was.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We had fun with it.
Oh, we did. We did.
It was a fun month just to watch some of these crazy things. And I thought it was a blast.
It sure was. Infuriating, too.
Yes.
I had the most fun. I can't believe I'm saying this. I had the most fun this year with Turkey Month.
I
and reviewing
it.
The Turkish sci-fi films. It was painful. So the prep was the most painful prep I've done. But reviewing those films was maybe the most fun I've had in a month in the entire time we've been doing the podcast.
Okay. I would say, and why is that?
Because there was no chance to seriously review these films. So we just got to have fun, make jokes, and just be completely lighthearted and goofy for a month. Which is odd from me, the deep meaning guy, and chewing on stuff and talking about issues and exploring the exploration of the human condition. But
wasn't happening.
For a month, we just got to be silly and funny and just BS. And it was great. It was a hell of a lot of fun. I mean, it made Thomas sick and it put me in the hospital, but it was a lot of fun.
Which is given the fact that we did have a comedy month as well, April Fool's, and somehow this one wound up being the funnier one. So, but it happens that way. Well, I'm going to complicate everything today. I'm going to be the overly complex one. By default, I always will say horror month by default. So therefore, I didn't count that because I'm just going to do it that way. October is my favorite month. Halloween's favorite holiday. So it wins by just on the competitive edge. That's it. So I would have said game month. But the problem is, that one was supposed to be fun time February, and because of life circumstances, everything got flubbed and messed up, and it got pushed to March, and then that got messed up because that's when the shutdown was happening. So due to external circumstances, what I was hoping to be the best didn't happen. So for me, it's going to fall down to Matinee May. I really liked watching the older series, the serials, where you can really see the influence, you see where the imaginations of these early creators was, because at that point, cinema was new, effects were new, stories were new, and the world was open and their oyster. Do whatever you want. Be crazy. And at that time, certain companies, though there were a bunch of money-grubbing jerks running the industry, you also had like United Artists, which was run by guys like Charlie Chaplin and other actors. So there was a little bit more leeway that I don't think you've seen rivaled since probably the, if I were to play periodization, the late 70s and early, and 80s, when kind of creators were just allowed to go hog mad and make their Star Wars and Indiana Jones and whatever else. So you get to see that, and you get to see the antecedents that would become a lot of what we're doing. And I had a lot of fun watching it, and I had a lot of fun collaborating with Don. So Matinee May by far.
Fair enough.
Okay. The second question was favorite episode. If you could remember or pick one, try to remember it, or at least one of your favorites.
I'll lead on this one.
All right.
Maybe not. Look, we had a lot of fun on this episode because it was a crossover collaboration, but it's more from actually watching this one and noticing a theme here with me. But the Velocipaster. Come on, man. It's a priest who's fighting ninjas with the help of a prostitute.
While he turns into a dinosaur.
While he turns into a Velociraptor. I mean, it is the most amazing concept ever, and it was a great, I can't even call it a B movie, it was like a C movie filmed in someone's backyard, but it was amazing, and it was just so much fun to watch, and we had a crossover collaboration with the Lunatic Parade on this one, and throwing all of that together, it was probably my favorite episode all around. That we did this month when you put the prep and the recording and the final product all together into one.
Okay.
Wow. It's a lot of points for being the Velocipaster, though.
Yeah, I definitely see that is up there along with, I would say, like one of the breakfast cereals, because those were all pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, the Bigfoot one, because that was just crazy.
Oh my gosh.
I think I might have to go with Bigfoot just because of how crazy of an idea those were. I mean, that was the beginning of Conspiracy Month, and that was just a blast to go off of the most crazy theory ever.
You have to ask, is it possible that the reason we can't find evidence of Bigfoot is that he's a trans-dimensional alien?
Somehow that was crazier than Flat Earth. I don't know how, but it was.
Yes. Somehow we went with the craziest conspiracy theory first.
In the ancient astronaut theory, Bigfoot, I changed him into David Childress. In the ancient astronaut theory, Bigfoot is not an ape. He's an extraterrestrial.
Well, he's look also at my hair. Also the slave species of the aliens, but also transdimensional.
Yeah.
It got weird.
They created Bigfoot to mine gold.
it sounds like a lion and an elephant and another low lump.
I forgot about the scream. Yes.
That was actually one of my favorite intros, but that's the next question. But so for favorite episode, if we go into Matinee May, my favorite month, it would have been the Fighting Devil Dogs. That was my favorite serial we watched. But I couldn't really pick an episode. So I guess the Fighting Devil Dogs just for the month. But really, any of the collaborations we did, be it with Ethan or Ruck over a Cosmic Anomaly, or even the interview we did with Brandon over at Gamers Haven, which, by the way, he still plugs Sci-Fi Melody, just so you guys know. Still leaves the cards out and people ask. He still gives us a push. So
we're going to have to go back there once, you know.
For sure. For sure.
This clears up some. Before then, once we all have time. Healthy.
Yep. And of course, Ethan is always a pleasure to have. Any of the collaboration episodes are always my favorite because it just adds that element. So I can't pick one. I'm just going to say any collab or interview.
I will say honorable mention, TerraVision.
Oh, well, and that was a collaboration episode.
Yep.
So, okay. Next one, favorite intro. And Killer I gotta clowns. Say, the Bigfoot one was quite good, Scott. That might have been the best one. The big
Killer Clowns.
Killer definitely. Clowns with you singing Send In the Clowns to the Krusty the Clown version.
Yes. That was not the intro to Killer Clowns.
That wasn't?
No, it no, was. Was. No, you said Send In the Clowns.
No, I did not do that. I listened to the intro today.
Oh, you know what? We just wrote it in as the for the show notes. Why am I thinking we did that differently?
Well, in hindsight, if we ever do like a Sci-Fi Melody revamped, that's what I'll do. Because now that I think about it, that's a better intro. Yeah. Send in the clowns. Send in those send in those laser and cotton candy blood sucking killers. Clowns. Send in the clowns. They're from outer space.
That's my favorite intro, the one that didn't happen. But since I got to pick one that happened.
Yep.
Escape from New York, where you are Snake Plissken.
Okay.
Ooh, that's. Oh, man, I'm trying. It might be Bigfoot for the scream.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Just that scream that was, oh.
I just sat there thinking, how can I find, okay, I can find a lion, then I can find a trumpet and an elephant.
And it's a lion fint. A dinosaur was in there.
What else was in there?
A dinosaur sound or something?
Yeah, no, I went with a lion roaring and an elephant.
But then there was also like a like a fake dinosaur sound or something.
Bigfoot sounds like the worst thing ever.
So now that we're talking about this, I definitely got to say the Bigfoot intro, because not only that, but just Picard and Spock saying things like, I don't understand, or but a flim flam, man. Or the last one was, no! This is all wrong!
I forgot I did that with those two.
Yep. Oh, so good.
That was the best intro by far. Although honorable mentions would definitely go to Jericho, because for one, I love the Jericho intro. It's a haunting intro. The Morse code and that short little music just gets me. But then it had some of our better quotes. And I also really loved the Book of Eli intro. That was because it was thematically connected to what the creator of the movie was trying to say, and it was powerful. So those are some honorable mentions for me. Best thing we reviewed, and by best thing we reviewed, it could be just the way we did it, or it was the best topic in your opinion.
I feel like this is a restatement for me, and it stays with the Velocipaster.
Okay.
Just staying with overall the most fun I probably had with one episode and the thing I looked forward to the most.
Okay.
I kind of agree with Scott. It was a good episode. It was a blast.
For sure. I'm making everything complicated again, so I had to break it down into categories. As far as funny, Turkish Superman was the best funny thing we ever did. The fun factor would have been the Firefly board game review, because we actually played the game. So that was a lot of fun. And we did it at Gamers Haven and at the studio. And then also somewhere in there would also be the escape from movies, because those are just fun. So, yeah, that would be probably the best thing we reviewed for my take. Most interesting thing we reviewed, which could be, and now this would be something that had the most potential for deep thought or did lead to the most deep thought, that sort of thing.
Ooh, 1984.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that death for sure.
We did that, and that led to quite a bit of deep discussion.
You know, July and August were, it's going to be in one of those, because yep. You have Give Me Liberty or Give Me Sci-Fi, and then you had Apocalypse, the post-apocalyptic setting. Those 2 months back-to-back provided the most meat for that kind of a discussion.
I'm right next door to you, Thomas, but I'm going with Logan's Run.
Fair enough.
And I kind of felt that Logan's Run gave me a little more to get into than 1984. But I might be misremembering. But as I sit here today, Logan's Run probably intrigued me more than 1984. I think it was more of a more fully developed look at a society, and a society that didn't think it was evil, but was, which became more intriguing. As compared to 1984, where you're supposed to be told straight off the bat, a little too much politicizing of 1984, where Logan's Run was a little more subtle in having a society that, while trying to be good, was evil.
Fair enough.
Well, and you have to remember author intent. Orwell was deliberately trying to make an anti-Soviet slam.
Yeah. So. Yep. I think it was a little too direct, whereas Logan's Run had the subtlety that allows you to really discuss things, where Orwell was saying communism bad.
Yeah, he was going way against the Soviet Union on that one. Yep. So I would say that because of the result, and this would dip into both of those movies, Book of Eli and Jericho, because they discuss kind of what could happen after a post-nuclear holocaust apocalypse. On one hand, you see it's all about certain elements trying to take advantage of the situation to take over. In Book of Eli, you see it on a smaller scale with the bad guy just trying to take the Bible and become televangelist number one, whereas Book of Eli, or excuse me, Jericho, you see rather the whole plot from a splinter faction of the government. But you still see that people taking advantage to take over, and that was evidenced in both of those programs. So that was, to me, more interesting, the most interesting, really. Scott, I'm surprised you didn't mention anything from Trekking Into the New Year.
It's too obvious.
Okay, fine. You know, with the month intros, too, it was hard because there were a lot of parody songs for Trekking Into the New Year, but...
It's hard. So I'm going to be honest. This is harder than I expected because my memory is crap.
Yeah, you know, I went back and looked through a lot of things. So, but that's okay. If you're going through the top of your head, that means it's the things that matter, that stand out the most, are the ones you clearly liked the best.
The cell phone has ruined my memory. It's horrendous.
Well, you're still pulling from what you find the best. So I'm just going to assume the first thing you remember is the best. So let's see. The next one, I'm adding to it, favorite month intro.
No. Oh, you're adding to it at this point.
Yeah, I'm adding to it. Favorite month intro.
I need a second here.
Mine would be definitely horror month again, because I really I listened to all the month intros, actually. And that one, between the music and the words and Ethan coming in just for the comic relief, it was a good combo that I really enjoyed.
Nothing is jumping out at me over horror month, so I think I'm going to go with you and say horror month.
Okay. All right. Thomas?
Probably the same. I can't think of anything that just jumps, but yeah.
Okay. So number moving along, number six, worst topic. Now, worst, of course, now this is difficult, and I'm not saying that it doesn't mean you didn't like it, but if you just had to rank it at the bottom of the list.
I got one.
Okay.
10. The last one.
Okay.
Oh, now, sorry.
Topic, I mean month topic.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you meant.
Oh, that's the next question, though. Keep that in mind.
Well, month.
All right. So I think this one for me is going to be the one that was the most challenging for me. And I think it was the one that was most challenging for us to pull off as a crew. Gaming month.
Yeah,
I think we struggled. Yeah. It's something outside of our wheelhouse that we don't have a lot of practice on. And we tried to do something that we don't do, which is to review board games or RPGs. And I think that it really wasn't our best effort. And if we went down that road again, we'd have to put more thought into it and some dry runs and really work at it from a creative standpoint. I think the idea was good, but I'm not sure that our execution of it as a crew, I think we thought we could do it and we didn't realize that it was something significantly different and hard to bring to a podcast medium in the style that we have.
I think part of the problem is, too, there were a number of external factors that just delayed things.
That was the start of COVID. That was right at the start of COVID.
COVID started in March.
This was March.
Well, we did in March, but it was originally supposed to be February with Fun Time February. But some external factors came in and we just weren't able to record on an even schedule. And what we did record, that was a rough month. So we had to push it back. And then COVID struck and that meant some other difficulties. So I get your point. That's why I'm not counting it as worst, because I don't think the material was bad. I think it was just a lot of things that were beyond our control happened.
Yeah. Whatever the reasons, that was not near our best execution of a month.
And that would no, but that was COVID related, work related, some other issues, just
travel.
It was just a difficult time. I mean, one of the weekends was I was on a retreat for the youth ministry I work with. So there were just some external factors that we just couldn't overcome. And that's why I don't count it, because if you gave us the same, because right after that, when quarantine started, we started producing great material on a schedule, on a steady schedule.
Yep.
Because we were all stuck.
I agree with you, but I think it also, reviewing a board game or an RPG game is very different than reviewing a movie or a television show or even a novel. It was a combination of a lot of things.
It's definitely out of our normal wheelhouse. That's something true. We can't do, but it's not what we have been doing. So it's definitely a difference.
All right. I was going to say that. That I didn't count it for that reason. I was going to say, as much as I love Horror Month, I also thought it was our worst because I set my standard at a ridiculous height and it can never be achieved. It's not that I feel we did badly, but I do, because what I set up for it in my head never pans out. Because I have an expectation that I think nobody could fulfill. So, and I make it, because it's my favorite month, I just get so hopped up on Jimmy, on his studies, on some kind of speed, and I got all these ideas that are going to be perfect, and they don't work. So, that's not because anything you guys did wrong or I did wrong. It just, I have unrealistic expectations for that.
Okay.
I disagree with you with Horror Month being the worst thing we did. I don't think it's close to it, but that's okay. I understand.
No. I'm not saying it was the, okay. It was just, you get my point.
Yep. It fell short of your expectations the most, and it was probably your biggest disappointment.
Yes. And that makes it the worst, not because it's bad, but because I have a terrible measure.
I feel the same way after every trekking in the new year that I didn't deliver what I was supposed to. So.
And that's it. That's what it comes down to. Worst episode.
Easy.
And or worst thing, rather, we worst thing we watched. I guess I could throw worst episode in there, but.
Worst thing we watched, IO.
IO.
I'm with you. I am with you 100%. 158%. That was the most boring thing I've ever watched in my life.
I will watch Star Crash or Wandering Earth or whatever it was a million times before I watch IO ever again.
That was the slowest, dullest, dumbest film we watched, and it was a torture to go through.
And if it was a sickies, if you felt that symptom was a bad symptom, give us a break. Did you see, if you watch the movie, you'll see what we had to work with. The name paint, of the episode, paint dry. Watching Paint Dry. We did the best we could. It gave us nothing. It gave us, it was like eating extra plain yogurt. No, worse. It gave it was like eating a quarter of a teaspoon amount of extra plain yogurt. There was nothing to talk about.
No, better example. If you've ever had gone to the emergency room for broken bones, you can't eat or drink if they have to do surgery.
Yeah.
So what they give you is a cotton swab with a little bit of flavoring on it.
If you get the salivate. Flavoring, man. Yeah. I mean, when the last two times I was in the hospital, they put you nothing by mouth because I had the obstructions. It's a cotton swab that you're allowed to just kind of wet your tongue with plain water or some ice chips. Yeah.
Exactly my point.
Yeah,
but
nothing, nothing
or, you know, I'll throw my comparison out there to round it out. It is the equivalent of living in the Demolition Man future before John Spartan destroys it.
I don't know, because at least they move at a moderate pace when they walk in that movie.
Well, sure. But I mean, you know, as someone said, I've seen Cocteau's World. It's a virgin in his pajamas eating flavorless tofu, listening to show tunes.
That's true. So, yeah, Io was definitely the worst episode, the worst material. The episode I don't feel bad about because we did the best we could with awful material. And not awful like, oh, isn't Turkish Star Wars bad? No, just so utterly boring that you really just can't get excited about it at any level.
And there's nothing there's nothing you can do with the material from a podcaster's perspective. You can't rip it. I mean, there's nothing to rip. But there's nothing to be excited about. There's nothing to discuss. There's nothing to break down. You can rip Turkish Superman. You can joke about the Velocipaster, Killer Clowns, Terrordrome, Videodrome. You know, a bad film you can do stuff with. But a boring, terrible film that is uninteresting and but is structurally well made and acted, but is just hideously boring? You can't do anything with that.
Right. So, yeah, definitely. What about, okay, I'm going to add one other category before we close out the last questions. Weirdest one we watched.
That is going to be Videodrome with Videodrome. The Swinger parents.
Oh, you're thinking of Terrorvision. Terrorvision.
Oh, Terrorvision. Okay, Terrorvision, yes, Terrorvision.
Videodrome was not, it was insane, but Terrorvision was the crazier one. The worst parents of the life.
For sure. I'm thinking Videodrome just because the vagina in his stomach with a fleshy looking VHS tape just.
No, you're right. Videodrome, not Terrorvision. Videodrome, yes.
Videodrome. I mean, if Terrorvision was the weirdest for you, I get that.
No. Now that we get back to video, yes, it's Videodrome.
Videodrome was certainly very different.
Yeah, no, I was getting the titles confused. You're right. It is Videodrome. Yeah,
they're similar. Terrorvision, video. They're kind of, yeah. You get
TV signals that cause cancer, that let you be manipulated and hallucinate, that you have stomach vaginas that insert VHS tapes into them.
Handguns that are actually your gun hand.
Yeah, that one just kept getting weirder and weirder and more bizarre. Definitely the craziest thing we reviewed, aside from what we found out about Joe Dworsky reviewing his. But no, that was the overall full film that we reviewed. That's the weirdest one. The trippiest.
Yep.
And the that whole month was trippy, though, because you could put Killer Clowns in there, and that was weird, and Terrordrome was weird, too.
Yeah, it was. But I'd say Videodrome was the one that made you say, whoa.
Yes. Beyond a doubt. Absolutely.
So then, the next one is the next question is, are there any room for, do you think there's any, what kind of way would you like to, well, you know what? Skip that question. We don't have time.
Improvements? Okay.
Go on.
Were you going to talk about improvements?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what kind of things would you like to see changed about the show?
I'll tell you where I need to be better myself. I need to talk less, a little bit, but second off, I need to get back to putting more thought and time into my editing because Mark is taking all the time to come up with fantastic intros, and I need to more consistently put the time into editing those intros and adding production value to them. And maybe that'll get back to us coming up with mid-show commercial breaks and little skits like we were doing for a while, which will add some production value. But I understand that if I'm not going to take the time to edit them and get them out on time and do the work behind that editing, then why should Mark take the time to come up with the great, not only the great intros that he does, but to come up with the mid-show skits that he used to do for us too? So from my perspective, in my chair, I need to come up with being, do more work on the editing side again like I used to, and find that passion and that drive again to do that. And then to increase the scope of Sci-Fi Malady, and potentially to make this show better for the people who do listen to it, I need to focus in my role as the founder of Raving Lunatic Media, figuring out a way to tie this show into a bigger marketing base or platform so that it can have some more exposure and maybe bring some more resources our way to do more things. There's a lot of things on that control side of it, not control side, but development side, that I have let slip as other things took priority in my life that I need to get back to doing. And that all ties together to do what I can do to help drive this show forward.
All right.
All right.
I'm just going to say getting back together in person.
That'll be fun. Yeah.
I'm just saying that because I feel like we're doing well. I'm not saying we're doing bad Skyping, but there's definitely a different feel and energy when we're in the same room.
Absolutely.
And I think that would be nice. And also, if we can get back to that, also possibly gain time to do other hobbies we've mentioned a million times about doing.
Yeah, that's an outside of show thing, but yeah, sure. Yes. I mean, we're going meta, so why not?
No, it's, you know, COVID's got to cooperate. And my feeling is that as we get some more vaccines and we get past the holiday surges of Christmas and New Year's and Thanksgiving, I think that it'll become safe for us to do some in-person shows again towards February or March. I think we'll start clearing to that way. I mean, I've had numerous exposures. Sarah has, Rage Master has, you know, and it's just at the moment, it's not safe to bring us all together for various reasons for all of us. But ultimately, I think we're going to get to that. And I think that'll be a good thing when we can all get back together in person in the studio and you know, record that way. It's coming, but it's close.
Okay. I suppose two things. One is, so the thing I said I would never do again, first chair, Scott handed back, and I don't think it was necessarily out of laziness. I think there was one day where just Scott didn't feel like he was strong enough to lead that, so he asked me to take over. I actually kind of gave no choice on the matter. And then he's kind of just let me ease back into it, despite what I said. And every time I say never, I wind up doing it. So I think I need to improve on that. I haven't quite gotten as good as Scott is at it as far as kind of keeping that balance and regulating and not taking over. I'm still very, still trying to fix that. So to try to take more of that Joe Rogan stance where my views are very well known, but I am not, I'm the more moderator than I am focused person. The attention's not focused on me. So there's that. And perhaps this is just, we'll see what you two think about it. Lean a little bit more into the rage.
Yes.
I mean, I got titles. Yes. I got the title, and I don't think I ever really leaned hard into it except when we did Conspiracy Month. So.
Yeah. We had a little bit of the rage from you in this episode, and maybe we get you back to doing some Rage Master Rips a Clip.
Yeah, well, that's all on me. I could do that. That's true. I definitely did it a little bit in Jodorowsky because I just couldn't stand the arrogance of the guy. There was a little bit there. But yeah, maybe lean a little more into it and keep the namesake up.
It's harder because as you've grown older and matured and seasoned, you've left that rage behind. You know, I mean, it's you know, I can still remember, you know, Mark of 20 years ago who would get enraged, or even 10 years ago. But, you know, some things with marriage and growing older and maturing, you know, it gets some of that, you know, it mitigates. I'm not as angry of a person as I used to be. Like, I only threaten umpire and officials' lives twice a year now. So, you know.
Oh, look at that.
You know. So, well, yeah.
And I'm thinking, too, about the best tantrum was outside his theater after we had seen Prometheus. And you, Scott, I, and Weaver were outside, and I was railing so hard against this movie, and I decided to demonstrate the stupidity of running full tilt after having your stomach stapled. And I ran around in circles in the theater going, "Ah, my stomach stapled, but I can run full tilt." And everyone in the area, bystander, passerby, and you guys were laughing so hard that I think that was the Rage Master you wanted.
You did something once in Harry Buffalo, too. We were out at Harry Buffalo and having a drink, and you lost it over something with Spider-Man, I think, and about what they were doing to Spider-Man. And you were just full Mark screaming and punching the table and shaking. And you didn't realize, I'm looking around, everyone in the bar is just like looking at you like, what is going on here? What is going on here? And I was, this is probably like 10 years ago. And I was like, whoa. So,
well, I think
that passion has kind of faded a bit, but you know, sometimes you can still channel it.
I wouldn't say the passion has faded. I'd say part of it is now that camera phones exist and you see people losing careers or jobs or credibility over things like that, I've tried to just really blunt that in public because you really don't want that to get taken out of context. And granted, some people who got the wrong end of the cancel culture maybe have visited upon it themselves, but it is mentioned, it is worthy of being noted that when that camera goes on, you've missed perhaps 5 to 10 minutes of context prior to.
Now, look, I,
and that doesn't necessarily excuse the guy in Florida walking towards a guy with a phone in a stance going, I'm threatened. That doesn't excuse him at all. But for all we know, the person who turned on the camera might have threatened to shoot that guy beforehand.
Yeah.
It didn't.
You don't know what you're missing.
But just my point.
Yeah. So. It's look, I am lucky that I lived most of my life before everybody having a good camera in their pocket and a medium to display it to the world.
That's right.
You know, I mean, look, all that would have taken, you know, I mean, look, man, 30-year-old me threw a baseball bat at an umpire over an argument in a softball game.
This is probably going to be the shortest because it's not all planned out yet, but anything you guys are looking forward to for the show in the upcoming year?
You know, it's difficult because so much stuff has been scrapped. And so I don't know what's out there to look forward to as far as new material coming out. And we've reviewed so much of the old material that I don't know what's out there to still go ahead and review. I mean, I am looking forward to getting through these episodes of Deep Space Nine that are coming up because they are honestly, as I have gone on in life, Deep Space Nine, it's not my favorite series. It never will be because of the nostalgia pop for the first two. But I will probably admit to you that it is the best series that's been done. And we're going to get into some really amazing discussions with these episodes coming up for next month. So I am excited for that. I'm also excited for a couple potential ideas I have if I can get motivated to expand this show to YouTube. I have ideas to do some small supplementals where I take like a 2-minute clip from Star Trek or Ancient Aliens and then just completely for like a real short, like 2-minute thing, just rip it. Like one the other day, Kirk is trying to get rid of a gaseous being that's in the ship's air vents. And he says, "Flood the air vents with the radioactive gas," or something like that. And Scotty goes, "Aye." And I'm like, "Flood the air vents with the radioactive gas. This sounds like a horrible idea. It's going to kill the crew."
Time out. Why is that a design flaw? Why is that a design option?
Why would you build that in? Well, don't forget, we got to be able to flood the air shaft with toxic chemicals.
Like, this shouldn't even be possible.
Hey, wait a minute. The reactor core. How come it doesn't have a connecting line to the air vents? What the heck?
It should have been fun with Captain. This isn't possible. But I want to look at doing stuff like this, or maybe a segment of Worf is an idiot for Next Generation, where they just rip Worf completely, or he's incompetent. or, you know, like David Hatcher Childress, you know, his craziest moments where he's talking about this this stone monolith that was built. And when you look at the height of it, it could only be Cyclops that built it. Could only be Cyclops. It couldn't be Goliath. It couldn't be Thor. It couldn't be Superman or Iron Man. Well, take your premise that it's built by something. It could only be Cyclops. Nothing else could have built this but Cyclops. Like,
Scott, it sounds to me like you should get on this.
Yeah, I think I've got the material in my mind to do it, and I think I can do it pretty well, but I've just got to actually find the motivation. It's right there with America Asunder. But yes, that's what I'm looking forward a bit to, if I can find the motivation to do it in 2021.
Okay. All right. Thomas?
I think I'm just looking forward to where we go, because I know how we've been going. I think we're going to continue to improve and just get better. And I'm just looking forward to where we go. That, to be honest. And probably the discussions that we will have. And possibly we will see if we can get some of these other ideas that we continue to float and place out there off the ground.
Yeah.
It just comes down to putting it on a calendar and doing it. Before we jump out of here, I want to say...
Wait, I didn't answer yet.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Are you looking forward to your Rage Master? Nope.
Are you taking over the helm now?
Nope. Sorry.
I would say that, first of all, Sicky, some of you might have just heard Scott saying, what else is there to cover? What else is there to cover? I'm not denigrating Scott here, but as the person who is am I allowed to say I'm kind of the programmer here?
Oh, you're the program director, content director. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm always looking and thinking of topics. All right. It's always going through my mind. So we will not run out of things so long as I don't suddenly get Alzheimer's or some other coma-like issue. So with that in mind, don't you worry about that. I'm looking forward. Right now, the only thing we have planned aside from trekking into the new year is March, which will be kind of a, and we don't mean this in any kind of black humor, sick, twisted way, but a commemoration of COVID that we're going to have a month about pandemic material, stuff from the pandemics. So I'm looking forward to what we do with that. That ought to be fun. Not because I'm happy COVID happened, but just it seems like a commemoration. So of when the shutdown started, happened in March. So kind of looking forward to that. And of course, whatever else we come up with, especially if Scott gets on some of these projects, that ought to be real fun. So I have a closing remark, but what do you got, Scott?
I wanted to say a sincere thank you to our listeners and our sickies who we know you're out there. Sincere thank you to those who have reached out to us. I also want to thank the friends of the show that have worked with us and collaborated with us. We've got Ethan Maestri with the Age of Geek podcast and the Drive Back the Night podcast. We've got First Table Gaming and the Lunatic Parade with that group. And then we've got that's just Destroyer Kurt and his crew there. And
Don O'Malley.
And Don O'Malley from Don's Breakfast Cereal. And then we've got the guys over at Cosmic Anomaly Productions with Ruckstar and that group. It's been a fantastic year to collaborate with these people in these different podcasts as we have over the year. And I want to thank those guys for being part of this, coming on and collaborating with us, because it's given us some of our excellent material. And it just helps the exposure of all the shows, ours and theirs, as we cross collaborate. And I know Ethan is going to join us next month during Trekking into the New Year for at least two of these Deep Space Nine episodes.
Okay. Well, as I was going back through the year's worth of episodes to do this list today, and I also went back to previous years as well. We probably logged in from start to now about 1,000+ hours of content with Amador Thomas. And I got to say, as we're going here, I've not been more happy that the way we've improved, that the way things have gotten better, and we've become more as professional as you can call us. But we've had more fun with it. We've gotten a lot better. And we've produced some stuff that I don't think anybody would, with the exception of our early episodes, which are always given a learning curve, we've not produced anything that people would say is garbage, and I don't ever want to hear it again, unless you don't like sci-fi, which, and dialogues between guys, which, okay, if that's not your thing, then of course. But why are you listening to begin with? Did you stumble upon it by accident and listen to an old episode? Come on. So. We're, as Scott said, thank you for those of you that have stuck with us for a long time. If you've stuck with us from the beginning, wow, that's impressive. If you've just latched on within the last month, or if this is your first episode, we try to make it so that the philosophy is every episode is someone's first. So if this is your first, you got a nice review. Otherwise, thank you for joining us so much along this ride. We look forward to seeing you in 2021. Stay six.
Stay six. To do, Rage Master.
Stay six, sickies.